From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. It's been one of the top stories in the community for many months, all the controversies and back and forth between Peace Health and Eugene Emergency Physicians. First, Peace Health terminated the partnership, then reversed course. And through it all, our reporter Tiffany Eckert has been there to cover every twist and turn. Today on the show, Eckert joins us to talk about this saga from the very beginning to where it stands now. Then, in the second part of the show, a reporter from the Register Guard joins us to talk about the sad and sordid tale of Cascade Relief Team that was supposed to help those impacted by the Holiday Farm fire, and instead, its leader is now the subject of a massive lawsuit brought by Oregon's Attorney General. That's next on Oregon on the Record. Peace Health, as a mainstay in the community, attracts a lot of attention, and for the past few years, a lot of that attention has been quite negative, from shutting down its Eugene Hospital to the controversies over its local contracts and the actions of local leadership. Right now, our reporter, Tiffany Eckert, who's covered the organization for years, joins us to break it all down. KLCC's Tiffany Eckert. Tiffany, it's great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
Tiffany, you've been covering the story. You broke a lot of this story from way back. Why don't you take our listeners back to where this controversy between Peace Health and Eugene Emergency Physicians, how it started?
Well, I don't know if controversy is the word, Michael, but we would call it, you know, this has become a saga. It is for
sure. Saga's a good word.
Yeah. So yeah, from starting at the very beginning, we all, and I broke the story on February 4th, mm-hmm. that Peace Health Oregon had announced it was ending its 35-year-long relationship with Eugene Emergency Physicians. Now, right now, I'll just say, most people in this community didn't know the term Eugene Emergency Physicians,
sure.
the entity, what they did.
Mm-hmm.
EEP is now sort of a household name. It's been in the news so much, and so much of the community.
You made it a household name to some degree.
Yeah, so much of the community has gathered around EEP, and that's is kind of how I'll refer to them henceforth. Mm-hmm. But this local emergency medicine group, it was decided that they would be replaced with a Georgia-based management corporation called Apollo MD, mm-hmm. another name that's now on the lips of many.
Mm-hmm.
The move really raised concerns among clinicians at first. When this first happened, they were realizing, the doctors, the nurses within the hospital system, hold on, you're looking to change a group of doctors and others
mm-hmm.
who we've worked with for decades. We know the system. We have this institutional knowledge, and they do too. So there was a right away a lot of concern. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
By February 11th, EEP unanimously agreed that they would not work for Apollo MD.
Mm-hmm.
They signed a pact refusing employment with Apollo MD for at least 90 days past June 30th, which would have been the date that their contract ended particularly at Riverbend Hospital.
Yeah, and I'm going to interject here. So Apollo MD is this physicians management group, but they didn't have any employees in Eugene. And in fact, they were kind of relying on the ability to find local people like EEP docs, right?
Exactly. And that was slowly coming out that it was being understood that this was a management group coming out of Atlanta, making some pretty strong, pretty big promises of how they would help with flow through certain types of things, wait times that the hospital, or, you know, Peace Health has struggled with these mm-hmm. issues. And it also came out that they are a management services organization. They're a group that is not supposed to work clinically in hmm. Oregon, right?
Hmm.
And as we come to find out, yeah, there's a law against that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, by the 24th of February, it had really gained steam, a lot of heat, and Peace Health Oregon's medical staff delivered a decisive vote of no confidence in hospital leadership because this decision was made by the chief hospital executive, Jim McGovern, who's now
We'll come back to that.
And chief medical officer, Kim Ruscher. So that was a really big move by the medical staff to say, we don't have confidence in you. And it really stemmed from this decision to switch EEP out for a distant traveling doctor kind of setup. Mm-hmm. And the staff also, by the way, overwhelmingly supported the reversal of that decision, to a new provider from EEP.
We talked to Mr. McGovern, Dr. McGovern, although doctor is an interesting phraseology here because he becomes center in this whole drama. Maybe pick it up from there.
Yeah. So Peace Health Oregon's top executive, Jim McGovern, he is a doctor of medicine in another state. Mm. However, he's not licensed in Oregon to practice medicine. He has an administrative license. He was placed on leave on April 9th, and we reported on this. This was really big news because finally Peace Health board members and top leadership started to hear the complaints of many of the physicians, including the emergency physicians within EEP, about allegations that McGovern was improperly directing clinical care to doctors against their clinical judgment. Hmm. He was basically armchair diagnosing, emailing suggestions as to how to care for patients, despite the fact that he has no license, right?
Yeah.
Medical staff voted to support McGovern's removal and also, again, back the plan to reverse, reverse the plan to replace EEP with Apollo MD. There's always that tacked on to every move and every action. But Peace Health did act and did put Jim McGovern on leave.
Okay.
Yeah.
Talk about from that point, and now we're talking about, okay, this becomes a legal issue, and there's some kind of even courtroom drama with regard to that. Pick it up from there as to where it goes.
Yeah, so because we skipped around to the point where earlier in the timeline, it became clear by lawmakers, they began requesting information from this Apollo MD. Who are you? Mm-hmm. How do you work? What's the structure of your organization? Who governs? That kind of thing. And requests were made by House Majority Leader Ben Bowman, who's a Democrat out of Tigard. He authored Senate Bill 951, and that really is another thing that people are starting to talk about a lot because mm-hmm. that is the law of the land now. It is basically the prohibition of the practice of corporate medicine.
Okay.
And it closed a few loopholes with regard to that, like using friendly physician models, which is something that it clearly became apparent in court. And as you referred, there was a lawsuit filed in March. And the next thing you know, we're seeing the first legal test of Senate Bill 951 in U.S. District Court, where it landed. And the trial opened with EEP physicians arguing that Apollo MD can't legally provide medical services in Oregon, while Peace Health's defense maintained the transition was lawful, despite having some communication missteps, not letting us know in advance and those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, it became an even greater saga in court.
Yeah. And if my memory serves, and correct me if I'm wrong, like, Federal District Judge Mustafa Kashubai, he even said, "I think that some of the witnesses for Apollo MD weren't necessarily being truthful on the stand." Is that correct?
That's right. On the third day of testimony, got really tense mm-hmm. in the courtroom because Judge Kashubai did, in fact, safe. He was there to learn. He kept telling the court, I'm here to learn. I need to know all I can. I need to know all I can, because at the end, this my decision sets precedence in this state. Mm-hmm. And that is very important as it involves Senate Bill 951. And so on day three, the problem was that Peace Health witness Dr. John Chapman, mm-hmm. he's the Illinois-based doc who was set to take over three of Lane County's ERs.
Okay.
He lives in Illinois. He had no intention, he said on the stand, of moving to Oregon, but he was going to run three emergency rooms for Peace Health, right? Well, he was basically unable to answer a lot of questions put to him about his group's ties with Apollo MD. And the group is Lane Emergency Physicians, which was whipped up. It was pretty much created by Apollo MD to be like EEP, only there were no doctors in it that okay. were certified in Oregon, right? And his repeated uncertainty led Judge Kusubai to say that the fact that he even has no idea of how his own company is set up defies logic and credibility. And finally, on the fourth day, he went so far as to say that the CEO of Dr. Yogan Patel and Lane Emergency Physicians, or LEP owner, Dr. John Chapman, were, quote, being dishonest with the court during their testimony.
Okay. And ultimately, that statement, the decision, it leads to a 180 by Peace Health. Where are we at now?
Well, court adjourned on May 6th. The day opened with news to the judge that an agreement had been, it was announced, and a preliminary settlement had been agreed to between Peace Health and EEP in the wee hours. They got together and they decided, okay, let's look at this again. And it resulted in a complete reversal in the very thing that had been asked of them for these months prior. And they planned to shift back to EEP, left Apollo over there, feeling very sure when I was watching in court that perhaps the counsel of Peace Health saw the writing on the wall and said, this is not looking good for us over these last few months.
Or, as we said before, a saga. Tiffany Eckert, you've been instrumental in the coverage of this saga. Thank you so much for coming in and talking to us.
Sure enough. Thank you.
We're going to take a break. I'm Michael Dunn, and you're listening to Oregon on the Record. When we come back, we hear from the Register Guard about a fraud case being brought against a nonprofit that was supposed to help people impacted by the Holiday Farm fire. Marcus Mark Brooks was the leader of Cascade Relief Team, which was supposed to help those most in need from the Holiday Farm fire. Instead, he's now the subject of a lawsuit from the state attorney general. A Register Guard reporter fills us in. Haley Kachansky, who is a breaking news and public safety reporter with the Register Guard. Haley, thanks so much for coming in and talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
I really enjoyed the very lengthy piece you did about this disaster recovery nonprofit that failed, basically. So let's start with this. What was Cascade Relief Team, and what was it supposed to do?
So the Cascade Relief Team was founded on the heels of the 2020 Labor Day fires mm-hmm. here in Oregon, which burned more than 1 million acres, destroyed thousands of homes, and killed 11 people.
Yeah, yeah. And so were they supposed to provide funding, support, resources? Kind of what were they supposed to be doing?
All of the above. Okay. They were meant to help victims of wildfires, floods, and as we will come to discover, tornadoes in okay. Kentucky.
Okay. So they operated in a couple of states, right? It wasn't just here in Oregon. It was in in Kentucky. So as we speak, even though this started years ago during that terrible fire season, the Attorney General has weighed in on this nonprofit. What has Attorney General Dan Rayfield said, and what are they doing towards this nonprofit?
Right. So in April, Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield filed a civil lawsuit against Brooks, accusing Brooks of stealing over $830,000 in charitable funds, meant to help the victims of the wildfires, floods, and tornadoes.
Okay, so basically the AG is saying you were supposed to spend money on people who suffered through this terrible calamity, and instead you took the money for yourself, basically?
Right. You took the money for yourself, and the attorney general alleges he spent the funds on personal credit cards, loans and bills, for vacations, paying off child support, visits to strip clubs, Disneyland, and even to pay for liquor and other costs and expenses.
And I imagine you tried to reach Mr. Brooks. Any luck with that?
No luck at all. We've partnered with our sister newsroom, the Salem Statesman Journal, to reach out to Mr. Brooks for comments, and we've not heard back.
Okay. Is there a way you can kind of give us a timeline for this? So they started work after that terrible fire. Give us a timeline of perhaps maybe when suspicions started to rise against Mr. Brooks.
So in the latter half of 2023, Mr. Brooks announced to his team of over 24 staff members that they were being laid off because Mr. Brooks could no longer make payroll.
Okay.
And so this raised suspicions among staff members who were mostly concerned about where the funding went and how that would impact the community at large.
Okay. Were there any resources that went to their intended beneficiaries? Did some money get paid out?
We don't know that yet at this time. There's an investigation ongoing, and we're really still looking to delve into what those answers are.
Talk a little bit about some of the emotions of the staff people you talk to. I imagine it runs the gamut of disbelief and hurt and anger, but talk a little bit about some of the things that they said to you.
Their reactions, I mean, this lawsuit has been at least 2 years in the making.
Okay.
Since 2023. So their reactions were describing it as inconceivable and pretty disheartening, especially with their connections in the communities they work in. Like, for example, Melanie Stanley worked for Cascade Relief Team as an operations manager in Blue River.
Okay.
She's currently in the process of rebuilding her general store, which was burned down in the fires. And she was totally in shock at just the sheer amount of money that Mr. Brooks allegedly stole.
Yeah, yeah. I'm wondering, too, about, you know, did they trust him? You know, did some of them still kind of feel like, well, maybe he's not a bad guy and this was just, you know, mismanagement versus outright theft? Are there some people basically maybe who still think he might be okay?
His former employees believed he wanted to do good, but just wasn't the best at managing funding, communicating with people. He knew a lot of individuals here in Oregon, in Kentucky, and in other parts of the U.S., and they believe he wanted to help those people who had experienced these large-scale disasters.
Okay. And just get us up to speed on what was the operation in Kentucky? What was that about?
So if I remember correctly, there were a few major devastating tornadoes that had occurred in Kentucky, and CRT received, I believe, a $326,000 grant meant to help those victims build storm shelters.
Okay.
But we don't necessarily know at this time what happened with these funds. I know some of them, at least, I believe at least $17,000 went into an overdrafted bank account held by Mr. Brooks.
Okay. Yeah, and again, CRT stands for Cascade Relief Team. you cover public safety. Looking back, and I know hindsight is always 2020, but looking back, were there a lot of warning signs here? I mean, I know nonprofits sometimes don't necessarily have the same, perhaps, leadership structure as, say, a government entity or whatnot. But I mean, looking back, I mean, were there red flags, especially with the idea, I think you mentioned the fact that the board never met or things like that?
I believe there were red flags according to the former staff members I spoke with, but they put a lot of trust into Mr. Brooks because what he said he would do and get done, he did. But there were just many indiscrepancies that started popping up and causing concern.
Okay. So he said he was going to deliver resources and help people. Mm-hmm. And they're saying some of that was done. But of course, when it comes to a forensic accounting of it, the money isn't really showing where it was spent, right?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. Boy. I'm wondering, are some of these staffers, are they kind of rebuilding their lives after this? I mean, can you tell us a little bit about how they're doing after this pretty harsh situation of being laid off and finding out that potentially the man in charge may have stolen hundreds of thousands of dollars?
Right. Some of their careers in nonprofit work is pretty much destitute. Some of them have been shunned from their communities, being associated with the Cascade Relief Team, and they've really struggled with that. They really loved the work that they did for the community. Mm-hmm. They believed in the work they did for the community, and so this news was really just devastating for all.
Wow, wow. Any idea in terms of timing of when the AG's action may come to fruition? I imagine it's probably a long time before it reaches some sort of resolution.
Probably, yes. Okay. So far, we just know that the complaint has been filed and we have yet to see that process come
okay.
to fruition.
For a community that suffered so much, this is like a double whammy. Really appreciate your reporting on this. Haley Kachansky, who writes about public safety and crime for the Register Guard, thank you so much for coming in and talking with us.
Thank you, Michael.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Monday on the show, the Dean of the College of Education at Portland State University will join us to talk about a new way they're developing teachers to promote and teach bilingual adolescent literacy. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.